this is Louis Vargas, and welcome back to the Art Scene Podcast. You're listening to episode 20 with today's guest, David Lasley, a painter based here in the Bay Area. I visited his studio in Oakland recently, where he discussed his experiences growing up in the Midwest, as well as living and working as an artist in Boston prior to moving out west. We also talked about his growth as an artist and how this is reflected in his current work. Before I play the conversation with David, I wanted to first acknowledge that this is the first anniversary of the Art Scene Podcast. I really can't believe that 1 year has passed by so fast, and I look forward to continuing to make more episodes for more years to come. That being said, I wanted to also thank the people who have made it possible for me to continue to do these episodes. And of course, that is Brian Adler, who has helped me do the audio and has taught me how to use the equipment. Nikki Nolan, who created the logo and the website and still helps me manage the website when I need help. And of course, Richie Cunning, a local Bay Area rapper who provided the music for the intro. And I also wanted to thank, of course, you guys, the listeners, and of course, my previous guests, which without you, either of you, these episodes would never happen. But if you would like to continue supporting the podcast, I encourage you all to leave a comment on the Apple Podcasts app. It helps get the show some more visibility. All right, now here is David Lasley. How's it going, man?
It's going good.
Well, I'm excited to do this because you're actually the first painter I've interviewed.
Oh, no. Okay.
I'm dead serious. So, you know, to be fair, like my introduction to the art world has been photography. And right, then slowly as I learned I got older that like, oh, I have to take art school classes to like learn more about photography. And then I started interacting with more and more like, oh, installation art, what's this? Yeah. Oh, like sculptures, like let's learn about this. And pretty soon. But so painting, though, has been like the least thing I learned, I think, just because it's the most cliche thing. Like,
it's the most angsty.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think it's like the most, like, if you talk to anybody about art who doesn't know about art, their first thing that comes to mind is painting.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. It's like a good gateway drug into the arts.
Right. And so, anyways, I've so far interviewed photographers, installation artists. Mm-hmm. I have not done a painter yet.
Well, a painter that's obsessed with photography, kind of.
Yeah. And we'll talk
but then
about
again,
that.
Who isn't? We all have Instagram accounts. It's not fair.
It's the world we live in. But we'll talk about your work. But before we do that, I wanted to ask more about you because you mentioned before to me off the air that you're from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's start with that. Like, tell me about where you're from, what town you grew up in.
Well, I was born in Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay.
And we moved because my dad teaches at on the university level. So,
oh, okay.
He's a researcher. So we moved to Peoria.
What does he research?
It's neurotoxicology.
What?
I have no idea. Don't ask me.
So he's like a PhD scientist.
Yeah. He's like a researcher.
Yeah.
Like teaches one semester, researches for grant money the other semester. But I grew up after like 2 years of living in Texas in Peoria. And there's not, that's Peoria, Illinois, which is equidistance between St. Louis and Chicago. I-74 runs through it. Caterpillar. There's not much else there. But it's not like a farm town, which is what most of Illinois is outside of Chicago.
Right. So you're still kind of like it's like a server.
There's culture.
There's culture.
Like, it was a little bit. It's like sports culture because there's like Catholic high schools left and right. But grew up there, went to undergrad at Northern Illinois University, which is an hour west of Chicago. Was going to go for like illustration, but realized that was not enticing enough.
Was art something that always existed even when you were a kid? Were you like that kid always drawing and stuff?
Well, I started drawing in 1988. That's like 4 years, but that's like, you know, that's the first literary child's drawing, whatever.
Right.
I didn't have the obsession with it until I started collecting comic books.
Okay.
Which is significant because today is National Comic Book Day.
Oh, like look at that.
So, yeah. But that was in 93, and I think after that it was just sort of like art for me was comic books, illustration, and I don't think I started going to museums until after high school.
Oh, okay. Why is that? Just wasn't interesting?
There wasn't much of a feeder program for that in Peoria. Any reason to do that? I was going to soccer tournaments every other weekend growing up.
So you were a big soccer guy growing up?
Yeah, I was playing it all year round. High school felt like D1 level
Really?
It was just like summer times were three days, which is like conditioning in the morning, weightlifting, and then light scrimmage at night.
Oh, you were like intense.
It was like, I mean, it was going to state every year. So like parents, the school, the program was all like.
Were you that good?
I mean, I made the teams.
I mean, I was on those teams.
Yeah, I was there.
So tell me something about that real quick. So you're the kid that's like doing the club soccer.
Yeah.
You're on the team. You're not only just on the high school team, but you're doing the club teams. I'm assuming.
Yeah. There's like club team was springtime, summertime.
Yeah.
School was fall time.
Right.
Wintertime was indoor, and then never the twain shall meet because it was conflicting. Because everybody who played was going to school playing.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, I imagine it's like the conflict between league soccer and national team duties. It's like that. But it's like, it has to have a separate season.
So even in that was like, did you ever have aspirations to like go the next level?
No. And I think that was a big deal because after a season of dealing with like 20 men.
Yeah.
Going through like high school, you were just like, everyone has so many problems. What the hell? Especially if it was like private Catholic school.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like people with like dad complexes. And you're just like, oh, everyone just wants to fist fight. This is really not. Right. That just didn't need
so,
to.
So you had to deal with a lot of the kids with the competitive dads who wanted them go D1 and all that stuff.
Yeah. I remember in high school, there was a kid that was in grade school that had like a dad like that who was like, he was training on the side. He wasn't even in high school, but he was like training at the training grounds like before us, and I was like, oh, there's that kid and his dad, he's like gotta be 15, not even, like, and you're like, oh, he's really overdoing it, like that's crazy, like he's doing that unfun ball skill drill where you just like dribble in through cones and back and like put your time which is beyond what we were doing, just like that's crazy.
Meanwhile, you hear the dad on the sidelines, put my son in, coach.
Well, I mean, everybody was like that in soccer. But I didn't play in college because having like an art major and playing a sport would have been impossible. Like, I've watched enough ESPN 30 for 30s to know that that's like a thing that's not gonna happen.
Really?
Well, I feel like the football and like Duke University, like North Carolina, those sports, the college culture and taking classes don't really jive.
Right. Well, yeah, because I guess in retrospect, well, it's funny you mention that because I played lacrosse in college.
Mm-hmm.
But I was obsessed with being in photography. I was a photographer.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was hard. I was a lot of like, if I had to do studio time, I think I made arrangements to like go get a key.
Yeah.
And from like 11 p.m. to like 2 in the morning, I was doing that.
Like the scheduling conflict was too great. So I just chose art and went that way. But I still played like men's leagues and intramurals. Until it was obvious that that was just a different fight club that, like, it was advertised for, like, playing soccer when you're out of shape.
Right.
And then after undergrad, I moved to Boston, lived there for 5 years, and worked in an art store.
And why Boston? Did you have family there?
I really don't know anymore. It was so long
ago. It was just, like, a big town. I want to go.
Well, I didn't want to move to Chicago, which was probably a bad idea in hindsight. But I had a cousin who is in Yale's painting program.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm just going to go hang out at the Yale Crits.
Right.
Like, right on those shoulders.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
It was really cool. I went to so many Halloween parties. It was, like, not normal. it was wild. Worked in an art store. Learned too much about art supplies. And then got into grad school and moved out here.
Wow.
Yeah.
For 5 years in Boston, just doing that.
I don't know. I could not afford to live there.
So did, how about your parents this whole time? Were they, like, supporting all of this? Like, worried at one point? They're like, I don't know what the fuck he's going to do.
No, I think they knew I had a work ethic, which was respectable.
Yeah.
They always, like, understood where it came from. Mm-hmm. Like, the comic books were always a source of inspiration, even if I couldn't make it totally obvious. So that was, like, they were fine because they were both teachers.
Too. Right.
So it wasn't like, oh my God, he's into the arts.
This they're awesome. Like academic minded where they saw it. Yeah.
I'm more skeptical of it than they are. I think I was always like, you know what? If you ever have kids, you don't tell them to go into the arts. This is a lost cause. Tattoo artists, maybe they make money.
Right.
Probably more so than what I do.
That Ed Hardy, he knew what he was doing.
God, it's unfortunate. It's genius.
So then, in undergrad, what kind of work were you doing? Were you just doing drawings and then you gradually went into painting?
It was always painting and drawing. Sculpture was like a novelty, and it wasn't like I couldn't understand it. It's hard to explain when you can't wrap your mind around it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was like intro classes, first 2 years, third year, I was obsessed with glow in the dark paint and like hit up like every craft store. It was like a weird addiction. And I worked out of that. And then by the time like I was done with 4 years, I was like going to bodybuilding shows, taking photos of like bodybuilders and making paintings from that.
And where did that interest come from? Because I've seen your work and it's, you know,
hasn't changed since then. To me, like, I just see it as like, well, this is like a sort of like a ballroom dance where you expand one step, shorten another, turn a different way, and sort of like repeat in a different fashion.
Yeah.
But it was from comic books when I was young, doing drawings of anatomy and like sort of like, why does that calf look different than this artist's calf muscle in the same way? Like, why is that? And like, why am I filling pages with that? And I was like, by the end of high school, I was getting into magazines like GQ and like bodybuilding magazines, because as you read up on superhero comics, they say don't copy anatomy from the people who are drawing it, which is weird. You get like anatomy books, or you like go to these resources.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was bodybuilding, which was just like so gross that it was sort of like,
those guys are.
It was acknowledging like a comic book culture, but it's also going into like weird art world.
Yeah.
Sort of like theory.
Yeah.
It's like gender theory came up, and like masculinity as a social construct. It was weird. It was like, I didn't know I could have probably made a profession out of that photography.
Sure.
Learned those things. It was definitely a culture shock. I was like, who are these people that come to these shows and like get all like gussied up or like,
right,
iodined? Like they would rub iodine.
It's nuts.
Yeah. I mean, there's documentaries that are still coming out about this stuff, and it's still fascinating. But what I was doing was sort of early, like what you could do in Photoshop.
Yeah.
But without it, I had like an overhead projector. So I was told very early on that like, don't spend so much time with the underpainting, just trace it. It's what you're going to go after anyway. And then that was the end of undergrad, and that all made sense. And then I sort of went out to Boston, and it sort of got jumbled in life after art school.
Well, what were you doing? Were you still making art while you were out there?
Yeah. Definitely still making art. I took a month off one time in Boston where I wasn't making art. I didn't have a studio, and it was just like the mentality was get home, make dinner, eat, watch Netflix. And like that was like, this is not gonna last very long. This is so sad. But that, I think after undergrad, I just wanted to do more things than just painting what you were like getting into.
Right. What you're experiencing.
Yeah. And also like those paintings were big and like no one bought them. So I just ended up unstretching them and like,
yeah,
they're rolled up in my parents' basement somewhere. So it's like, well, we learned that lesson.
so you were trying to live a professional artist life, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had studios, or a studio, maybe two. How many studios? I guess I had a home studio for a while. And then I had sort of like a studio to go to. And I felt more comfortable going to the studio, treating that more professionally than like having a bedroom studio or like a side space in the house, which I want now because it's just one less commute.
Yeah.
But it's a lot to block out when you go home and you're like, well, I could be doing laundry. This has been sliding.
And I guess it helps you also like kind of make you feel like this is the difference between a professional and a homeless person who's like won't give up this dream.
Yeah, you might have an open studio and people might take you seriously. But also, it's not really safe if you have a home studio and you're painting with oil paint. It's like, well, it's not really that smart.
So what motivated you to get out? Like, you were like, over this life, and I'm going back to school.
Yeah, as soon as I got out of undergrad, I was like, I want to go back. That's crazy to not do this again. I was going to Yale Halloween parties. And
tell me about these Yale Halloween parties for a second.
I mean, I didn't go to Yale, so I can't. Too knowledgeable. But I was going to crits, like the group crits in the pit. People could just come at you from every angle. I went to an end of a semester crit, which is just like 8 hours of just talking about someone's work every 30 minutes, I think, was the structure. And I think they were open to the public, so it wasn't weird that I was there.
Right.
But I also, my cousin was working there after she graduated, so I was like, oh, I get to go in. And I was really like, this is great. Like, this is so obscure to me. This is, like, tangible. Like, I can, like, strive for something. And then it's, like, applying every year and sort of sorting out, like, where you are around, like, Christmas time is, like, the deadline and stuff. Like, end of the year, it's like, this is what it culminates into, these slides, this document. And sort of didn't have a good grasp until, like, that last year of, like, what application materials need to look like mm-hmm. and sort of so on. But then, like, by the end of my 5 years, I had acquired so many friends that had MFAs that I was just like, it was constantly like group therapy to talk about your grad program. You were right. Just like, everyone wants to talk about it. It was really a strange 2 year period, no matter what program mm-hmm. that it was like an oral history. It's like, yeah. And then you go into crits and there's that guy that's like talking shit and that professor that hates you and they're going to say that and you're going to rebut. And it's just crazy. And then there's like fights afterwards at bars. And it was just like really romantic. As opposed to being like, well, I could just wait around for Open Studios next year and like see what happens.
Yeah. Well, why did you choose to go to SFAI?
Oh, it was financial. I didn't have to pay very much at all.
Yeah.
I had no reason not to because I had like not been to San Francisco.
Yeah. Isn't it funny too? Like, because I have friends who, you know, in the last couple of years decided I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to go to architecture school.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was a kid, at least, you're taught to go to the best school. Of, you know, you go to the school that's the best education, but then in reality, mm-hmm. you go to the school that you can afford.
Yeah.
It's what it comes down to.
I mean, I applied to New York schools because in Boston, you just go to New York for your art fix.
Like, yeah.
I don't know why I didn't move to Brooklyn, but I got into grad schools in New York and it just seemed like SFAI had enough professors and financial aid that it was like, well, I'll just like blaze a new path back across the Midwest
yeah.
to a side of the country I've never been to.
So you've never been to the West Coast at this point?
I went to Seattle once.
Oh, yeah. Different.
That's, yeah, right? Not yeah. California.
No.
But I couldn't, like, after the end of, like, 5 years in Boston, you sort of realize that there's not much art to sustain. It's a campus town, you haven't heard.
Yeah, there's, like, 5 million schools there.
Yeah.
Well-named schools.
Right. Good schools, people that don't stay after school so much.
Yeah.
They go their separate ways. It's like...
So really the population is just the current students.
Yeah. Summertime was like this vacuum of people.
Wow.
Because people, like the students would go home. There'd be like summer programs and stuff, but you'd just like see a different city altogether. And I didn't know anything about San Francisco, so I was like, I'm not going
right.
to be like hurt by it.
This town looks great.
Yeah, it's like it's, you know, Ocean Beach, you know, sunset.
So now you're at SFAI, and this is where I meet you.
Yeah,
because we had a class together at one point, and I didn't. When I met you, it was a art history class. It wasn't really it was about the history of LA. Yeah, about the history of LA and art culture and stuff. But then, you know, I think our professor knew your work, and he referenced it. And I think the first time I saw your work, it was nudes.
Yeah.
Some with your face on them.
Right. There are some with my face, some not.
Your paintings reminded me, because the way the subjects and the paintings mm-hmm. were very, they seemed very, they glistened. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I had in mind was like a marble statue,
right.
Like Renaissance. It was Renaissance-esque, yeah. But the colors is what for me made it feel contemporary.
Okay.
At first,
yeah,
this is like, again, you know, not really knowing much, not being a fan of painting at this point, right? Where I was just like, oh, this is different. Like, right. I'm expecting something else. So tell me about your work. Were that type of work, was that what you had picked, like, were left off at when you were in Boston or undergrad? Yeah. Or was that was you changing into something else?
Well, working retail, like customer service for that long will just, like, degrade your soul. Like, art store... retail will just run you dry. And so going to the studio became like this protest to that. It was like, I'm gonna go be as happy as humanly possible,
okay,
and make what I can feel the most about, which yeah. was the human figure, because I moved away from it and discovered that I was awful at painting landscapes. Even if I tried to meld like the figure into the landscape, it was
yeah.
like not working out. So it made sense that I went to SFEI because there was like a large cult of like selfie glamour shot students coming out of that program using photos, which is like, oh, this is what I do. This makes sense.
Right.
And I knew that any critique was going to be at the harshest be about me and like what I do in my life.
Yeah.
Like it's about these experiences and it's just going to come back. So I just would cut the corner and be like, well, I'll put myself in this. And it'll be this shameless bad marketing, which I realized afterwards. And I was like, this is, oh, I don't like this. But
well, and you were kind of prepared for it too. Like after talking about the Yale critiques you go to, like you kind of were like, you knew what you were getting yourself into.
I thought so. I think that put the bar up so high that I was like, that was good to see. I think had I not had that experience, grad school would have been different firsthand. Mm-hmm. Like being in a program, not having that experience, I would have been like, oh, this is just cool. I would have been like not as torqued up and tense in every critique, wanting a certain thing. But the work I was making was just me teaching myself about art history and trying to reconcile that with like a love of comic books, which I kind of pushed to the side because you don't want to talk about comic books in a social setting. Right. Like to new people, you're like, oh yeah, no, I don't read comic books. That's crazy. Why would you even? No, never. But now I realize that that's very important to me. And those are usually the books that I like spend the most time buying or reading. And if I go see the movie, I've read the book before the movie. I'm not reading Harry Potter or like Lord of the Rings. It's like something more lowbrow, I guess is the right word.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about comics, like I didn't grow up reading comics. And then I don't think I've seen a real comic book until I was in college. And that was because my roommate was really into them.
Yeah.
So anything I know about like Marvels and the movies, like it's because literally through oral history type lectures from my roommate, I would learn about the comic book characters.
It's really funny when you meet someone who's like been there in the 90s for it because it's just like you start speaking in this secret code. It's like I started at the height of like when like the female characters were just unrealistically drawn.
Right.
And it was my first comic book was in 93. It was X-Force 23 and it had Deadpool on the cover and a female superhero, Domino, which might be in Deadpool number 2.
That's right. I do hear.
Right.
Yes.
And I remember my mom not wanting prior to buying it not wanting me to read comic
books. Right. Cuz she's probably thinking it's porn.
Well, yeah, and also there's so many guns, and it's just like, this kid doesn't need more violence. He's already aggro as hell.
Right.
But I finally got it, but I was thinking, like, years later in grad school, I was like, oh, because it had a strong female lead on the cover, she was like, that's fine.
Right.
That guy can die.
But oh, wait, she breaks that guy's neck in the middle of it? Oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, that's perfect. Right. That's feminism, sense. First wave. but after that, it was just like, trends of like certain industry standards I wasn't picking up on until I look back and I realized there was like a grunge era and there were too many belts and pockets on like superheroes that were just unnatural. It's like way too much.
Isn't that weird? I mean that for sure was the first thing I think that came up for me was like why are these guys like so unnaturally like in shape. I mean, I guess it makes sense because they're superheroes and the only way you can jump. And then I thought about it and I was like, well, I see Olympic athletes and they can jump really high and stuff and they're not that. As a matter of fact, being that buff does not help you be able to jump farther and faster.
It really opened up like casual science, like science you didn't know about. Right. So you couldn't argue with like what the Hulk was or like what Spider-Man is.
Right.
But there were some like underlying, like if you really wanted a critical read, there are like social issues at play.
Right.
I think you get that with like movies like the X-Men.
Yeah.
Like some scenes where you're just like, oh, this isn't about, oh, I see what's going on here.
Yeah.
Like, this is something deeper, which is good.
Right.
Sometimes it's a turnoff to get to that point, to go through all the bad, silly, hokey production of like costumes. Mm-hmm. And like this leap of faith where you're just supposed to believe that this happens and there's a superpower flying out of a fist.
Like, right.
It's crazy. Yeah, grew up going weekly to getting those comic books and like didn't really want to put it into work until like maybe a year ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
Grad school was just like art history, learning that like Rubens and Rembrandt and like Van Dyke might have been around at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And learning sort of like that history, but like learning it through just scanning endless images of paintings and sort of figuring things out that way.
Yeah.
the work then was so much more art history than it was superhero, I guess, from my standpoint.
Yeah.
Like making it, it's right. one thing, and then getting right. that finished painting is like totally different afterwards.
So. Yeah. So, you know, tell me about where have you taken this fascination with the human anatomy mm-hmm. to now? Because your work is totally different than yeah. it was 3 years ago.
Well, I embraced the comic book more.
Okay.
Embraced more of my colorblindness more because that's comical.
Are you colorblind?
Yeah. I mean, like, really? Most of us are. Like, you don't.
Sure.
You?
But, like, is yours extreme compared to mine?
I don't know. I mean, that's the arguing point. I can see color.
Right.
There's a setting on your iPhone where you can adjust the color blindness.
Right.
I don't really know how that works. All I know is what I see now, I can understand within a system. Like, you learn right. that. It's difficult, I think, in theory, like, at the beginning when you're like, oh, that red isn't popping as much as it should be because of that person's comments. Like, who are they? Is their vision any more right than me?
Well, is there a specific, like, example of what you noticed? Like, oh, yeah, this is a color blindness?
I know I'm red-green. I don't know anymore what people see
yeah.
from one person to the next. I know that when I pick color palettes, it doesn't matter because I'm picking pigments, transparency of paint, warm and cool,
mm-hmm.
Which I think might be, like, where that... color blindness like shows. It's like yeah. if it's warm or cool, or if it's like a saturation
sure.
problem. But I've sort of nixed color theory, and like that's kind of a struggle right now. Like I haven't yeah. worked on some of these paintings because I've been working on the drawings, and with the drawings, that's not an issue.
Right.
Like, that's yeah. fight. You're just gonna pick a shade of.
Right.
But I kind of just got bored with trying to figure out or being a worker for anatomy, like figuring out why this deltoid doesn't look good with this pec muscle. Like mm-hmm. that doesn't, like my peer group doesn't like critique paintings based on like correct skeletal system.
Sure.
It's more like, is this going to provide a long enough discussion or a strong enough opinion of work, and like how well does it translate to Instagram and so on.
Sure.
I also feel like there was a point in the last couple of years where I was on a couch playing Photoshop and I just took a step back and was like, I'm a 30-year-old man learning Photoshop. This is crazy. I'm so behind, but I love it. Because the photos all come from, or the paintings come from photos. I'm not adept at painting from my imagination.
Sure.
And I think when I do get good enough, I go to a photo. Even like when I've tried to like step out of my comfort zone, that's what it comes back to. It's like, well, I know I can just find a photo on Google search. And I can like analyze that, so I might as well just go right to the photo
sure.
and manipulate the photo in different ways. Because I think the history of painting was sort of married to the history of photography in a way. I think like Caravaggio's had like silver found in like the grounds,
yeah,
because the camera obscura would like transfer the light.
Well, like in photography, before it was considered an art, was just used as a tool for painters.
Yeah,
right. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of like the history of photography before photography was like how well you could paint from light. That was like a David Hockney book that was like
right.
so awesome. I found in undergrad. And it was funny because there was still a teacher in undergrad that was like, that's bullshit. Like that's no, they learned how to paint the old way, like yeah. by eye. And it's like, no, that's unrealistic.
That's not true. Yeah. right. Yeah. And funny enough, you know, early photography when it was pictorialism, mm-hmm. it was, you know, for photographic. Photographs weren't considered art unless they replicated what a painting looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that was like the 19th century, like 1824.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This is like a weird breakup because in yeah. like painting.
Well, yeah. Well, the early 1900s was with Alfred Stieglitz was when he finally was like, no, fuck that.
Yeah.
Like we're our own art, but he still made it look like paintings.
Yeah. It was painterly. And then like periods of art history are like they go back, they don't, they go back, they
yeah.
don't. Now it's just more like the internet. Just the internet.
Yeah. Well, you know, we can, you know, Ansel Adams was the guy that was like, doesn't look, need to look like paint. I mean, he had the right idea, mm-hmm. but then it was like, okay, but doesn't have to also be landscapes all the time, Ansel.
Yeah.
Like, we get it. Doesn't have to look like a painting to be art, but it also doesn't have to be mountains and trees all the time
right,
either.
Thank God.
yeah. yeah. tell me where you're at now with your work. Because now that you mention your color blindness, now I'm looking at your work and there are a lot of warm colors.
Yeah. I don't like blue-green painting so much, but I also like to use... I feel more challenged as a painter if I try to include the entire color wheel at some point. I've gotten good at sort of going into Photoshop and like playing with the color palettes and saturations and sort of making sure that all bases are loaded, essentially.
Well, and you're also doing this thing in Photoshop where... and of course, when I mean, you know, for our audience to understand... the drawings that you base these paintings on, mm-hmm. you first mess with it, the original image on Photoshop, and you distort them a lot. And why is that?
I just don't think, I don't like photorealism.
Okay.
I'm tired of people on the internet being surprised if it's a drawing or a photo.
Yeah.
Like, can you tell? I don't care. But at the same time, I'm doing that here. It's just not the same photo. It's not as well painted. I feel like these are good drawings with paint.
Yeah.
Which took me a couple of years to realize that was okay. I can do that.
Yeah.
It's not ideal for a painter, but that's fine. But the problem with Photoshop is it's like you can crank out an image for a painting.
Right.
You can crank out like 5 or 6 in a sitting.
Right.
But the paintings take forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, for sure.
Like it can be on 3 or 4 months with that one. I can, and you know, while I'm working on that, if I've compulsively started other work, which mm-hmm. is what I do,
yeah,
it doesn't help to finish that one any quicker.
Sure. And then just to describe it, so we're in your studio right now, mm-hmm. and the way you set it up, which is actually, it's really fascinating to me because I've never seen this before, but you basically nailed a bunch of different size canvases on the wall. Yeah. You've hung them on the wall, and then as you go, you pick a canvas that you want to work with, and you work on a painting. But it seems like you have like 5 at a time that you're working on at the same time.
Yeah, I got really nervous when I realized I was just working on one and I kind of like went into production mode. The studio is set up so that I work 40 hours a week. I'm a woodworker. I work in a frame shop.
Okay.
Which is helpful because any drawing work I can just make frames for.
Sure.
And it's great because it doesn't cost as much when I go to a framer. The goal is to come in here after work for at least 2 to 3 hours a night if possible. And just be here and be able to work on any one thing I'm in the mood for. Like the work ethic is pretty moody.
Yeah.
Like I could be in here 1 week like making, stretching, and gessoing canvases. And then the next week I could just be like working on a little bit of paintings. Or like the last 2 or 3 weeks I've just been drawing because it's nice to just sit down after the work day and be like, I just want to listen to music and draw, and I don't need to do anything else until like 11 o'clock and I can go home and cash out.
Yeah.
But then like it's cyclical because then I'll be coming back to painting. I'll be making canvases and I'll get tired and get back to drawing, which is good. But I also feel like that's like kind of a little bit of a closed circuit.
Yeah.
But I enjoy that. That's what it comes back to. Like after I find out what I enjoy, I follow that and sort of like parse out the good from the bad and sort of follow ideas that way.
And so then what is your ultimate goal? Because have you been showing in the last couple of years? Or
I've been in a couple of shows.
Yeah.
Group shows. The last one I was in was C2C, which was cool. And then I was in a group show at the Battery when that was a funny show. That was a great show. Like I really am happy with like the people I've shown, which is just good.
Sure.
I've gone to group shows where I just feel like that's not always a privilege to have. Like you sometimes are just like, oh, this, that, not that, this, mostly that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're funny experiences. Like I don't really get too much from the openings or the shows other than like, marketing, I guess, via Instagram.
Yeah.
It's good for a deadline. It's good to hear people's thoughts and comments.
Yeah.
But I'm not someone who likes to be in that limelight.
Like, yeah.
One opening, people approach me. They're like, you know some of these artists? And I was like, go, that person, them, her, him. And I sort of was like, not me. No.
So you keep to yourself on those
ones. Like, I feel good if, like, about 6 people
Yeah.
get to see the work and enjoy it. Yeah. Like I feel like that was the most you can get from grad school, if nothing else. Like, yeah, you get like two or three people that understand you outside of your immediate family.
Sure.
But because they're going to understand it for the most part. And that's what I mainly care about. Because I'm not making giant work.
Right.
I don't need to take up that much wall space.
Right.
Maybe in the future that's a possibility, but for me right now, like, sort of this size work is good. I like that.
So what do you, so you're just kind of content with just like, I work, got my job, I do my paintings because I like doing them.
Yeah. The expectations aren't like, I need to make money on this.
Right.
I need to like make sure five paintings sell this year of this size. I need to have like this many studio visits. It's all really casual.
Right.
And I feel like that expectation is good now. When I got out of grad school, it felt like you were in this rat race immediately again. Mm, like, yeah, you were just tired of making work.
Right.
And then people were like, well, I got to have a show now. Like, I got to have this, sure, have this body of work that I've already made and seen at my MFA show. I need to get this out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of just like, I'm going to take my time. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't want to peak too soon. Like, what is
this? Well, and you kind of like spent 2 years straight doing that, I feel like, with school. So yeah, you're kind of like, I just need a couple years where I just relax.
If it's that, I felt like if I was making work that I could just sort of breeze through seamlessly into another area, I didn't like work hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I worked pretty intensely, I thought. And that's what I wanted from grad school. So I was like, okay in that department. But at the end of it, you're like, okay, I need a break. Like, something needs to like tweak and I need to like calm down. I need to have like two nights a week to myself where I'm not at the studio.
Yeah.
And I also just like, I couldn't be in the studio like 72 hours a week.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't realistic anymore. I enjoy having the lifestyle of working 40 hours a week,
sure,
at a job and then being able to come here.
Yeah.
And sorting out the day or like why I'm more hung up on something in the studio or outside of the studio.
Yeah.
Then being in here like every day, not having like,
yeah,
want a steady source of income or healthcare or just like a life.
Yeah.
You need to have a life for this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and also, I guess you just came back from a trip recently from Europe, right?
Yeah. I went to Italy for Christmas, which was funny. I went to Rome. I was in Rome, went to Florence and then Venice. And then once I got back from there, I went to Mexico City for an art fair, which was like polar opposites.
Yeah.
And now I am sick and tired of traveling.
But you know what? You wouldn't be able to do that if you were in what you call the rat race.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to be in a mindset to relax.
That took me like a year or two to like reconcile and realize that like everything's just going to be fine. And no one wants to talk to the artist that's like hungry for a show when it's like at the opening, like, well, I'm so angry. I should be in a show. Why am I not getting this?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because Nando Alvarez, who I interviewed him recently too. And I asked him about that. Like,
yeah,
if he looked at other people's art, and he said he didn't. And the way I equated it to was like an athlete where, if you ask a professional athlete, oh, do you know what that guy, their like counterpart is doing? They're like, I don't know who that guy is. I don't give a shit. Because to be honest, like, they were like more concerned about like, I'm worried about what I do.
Yeah.
And whatever comes, comes.
Yeah.
And because otherwise they would just lose it. And I feel like that's kind of the same way where you're like, I don't care about the shows. If it comes, it comes. Yeah. I just want to be happy, content.
There is my thing. There's the aspect of like the community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I go to the shows. I went to an Interface show last night. I try to go to more Oakland shows in SF because I am in Oakland, and it's just like a drag to go to like
it's the same way
far off places where there's numerous galleries. I won't name names.
Right.
But it's just easier for me out here. Like, I can ride my bike
and
not have to avoid hills.
Yeah.
Or like that chilly wind. It's like I can just go to Oakland and be an Oakland artist. But you have to go support your friends in like a gallery. Otherwise, you, in my eyes, like, it's hard to justify you having a show.
Sure.
Like, you just have to get put in the FaceTime. And if you're not doing those, if you're not like helping other artists in this community, then it's sort of like, why should anybody be like giving back to you?
Sure.
Like, I mean, that sounds a little manipulative, but like, I'm a framer.
No, I think that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it's I apply that same philosophy, I think, not only to work, yeah, to friends, friendships and stuff. I mean, yeah, it's just like, if you want something, like, you got to put something back in, yeah, it, you know?
So I became a framer 2 years ago, and since then I've been able to, like, as a result of getting like a deep discount on framing, I can buy art, which is weird that I can do that.
Sure.
I don't know why. It's like, support your friends in any way.
Yeah.
I can frame it, and then also I can like pass off that knowledge to like people who need like a canvas restretched.
Sure.
And like how to get the best quality, like join or squareness, which is more problematic than you might know.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to be, as opposed to someone who's like living the free life where it's like, I'm a full-time artist. And like, oh my god, I can't stand that.
Yeah.
And there's, for me, it's just so many realistic problems, like healthcare.
Sure.
Like, where is your source of income to pay for your rents? Yeah. You're in this like high.
Right. You're realistic.
Yeah, realistic. Yeah. Like, let's be honest about this. And then you have a car and you're driving around. Like, what's up with that? If I'm working at like a gallery sitting or something like that, mm-hmm, like that's good.
Yeah.
I might hate it because I'm bored for 5 hours. But at least I can do something for someone in the community. And then I'm not asking for anything in return. It's just like, right, friendship, and then people, like, that's how you just get things done.
Sure. Actually. Where do you think that comes from? Is that Midwest?
Yeah. I mean, it's like regional artists, yeah, like going to grad school. Like, I mean, I don't want to be too mean about it. Like, there were too many people for someone like me. Like, I don't need to be in a program with like 100 people. Or 200. I don't need to be around. I can't deal with that stuff.
Why is that?
It's because I'm a Cancer. That's my sign. I learned that in grad school. A casual science. It's like meteorology, sure, or, God, like astrology, crystals, karma, stuff like that. Right. I'm not from California, so when I came here, I was like, what is all this and why is it true? And that just like flung me into a different direction. I didn't like put it in the work up front, but I was putting constellations in the backgrounds of, sure, paintings. Yeah. I kind of liked them, but like it was hard for people to notice them because the dots, like the little white dots, were so tiny. And I would just forget what constellation is there, so it was just like, well, this isn't good. But it is kind of like a regional, like, I, when I meet Midwestern artists, like I feel like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know. We're going to talk about Chicago at some point.
Right.
Like, yeah, suburb.
Right. Right.
And, like, the routine, the, like, a Midwestern, I mean, this doesn't make any sense, but, like, I judge things like this. Like,
sure,
where you're from, and then it's, like...
I'm the same way. Yeah. I mean, I'm from San Diego, and the stereotype that we get is that we're too laid back, because it's, like, yeah, surfer culture,
I mean,
which...
has some good... hardworking.
Well, sure. And there actually is somewhat of a, there is truth to that. And I didn't realize it till I came up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, for instance, that people in San Francisco are not laid back enough. And I didn't, mm-hmm, realize that until like I moved here,
mm-hmm,
because it's a city, while it may be the most laid back city of all the major cities.
Yeah.
But for me, compared to San Diego, where everyone's just like, why do it now? I'll do it later, man. Like, that's what it was. I mean, like, I just want to go chill on the beach, get myself a California burrito. And I didn't realize that until I came here. Yeah. And people are like, no, we got shit to do. We got to do this. We got to do that. Like, oh, people. Man. Yeah.
I mean, like, my studio practice has always been like work after work and twice as much on the weekends. That's me avoiding life problems too. So I'm not against acknowledging that. But like, that was like, you don't have nature part, like nature hikes. You have corn, soy, alternating. <That's it. laughs> Everything is flat.
Do you hike? No, I farm.
Yeah.
I go outside and I actually do shit.
And coming out here was like, people are like weekend trips to Napa or like Yosemite. And I was, yeah, like, hold on, where am I? Like, this is still, like, I wasn't used to not having a change in season. The Midwest was like a, what was that? There was like a certain climate that it was called, where it was just like hot summers and like cold, yeah, winters. And like, it was sort of like that in Boston and the East Coast. But coming out here, everything was just chill. Like, a little, yeah, cold today, but not really. I wasn't used to that.
Well, even for me, the let's go to Napa or we can go hiking here.
Yeah.
That's new to me because in San Diego, it was like you're either at the beach or you're just chilling wherever you're at.
Yeah. So when you find people that are like,
yeah,
I agree with you, David. I don't know why people do that. You're like, you're my friend.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's
so
true.
So that's what grad school, I got good at identifying personality types that I was better off with than others. And some were more toxic. Some weren't, and some I'm still rediscovering. I feel like I watched Indiana Jones and the Lost Ark, and there's that scene where they drop into the snake pit, and that's grad school.
Yeah,
you're around snakes. Watch out for snakes. They aren't even real snakes, but they're toxic. They're gonna drain you.
Did you feel that? You felt that way?
Afterwards, I was I saw that scene, and I was wow, that's right. That is so on point. And you have to climb on top of the statue. History. Break down a wall, and you got to pass all the mummies. You might have to look up the scene.
No, then, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
you get out of the tomb, and then I think that's the Nazi fight scene. Watch out for propellers, which is really what it's like the first year afterwards, where it's just really graphic and real. Like when I first got out, that first job I had after grad school was in a Scottish import store, wearing a kilt, working for minimum wage.
Sure.
What is life?
Yeah.
Is this what... It has to get better. It has to. And then it did, so that's good.
Yeah. I'm impressed that you were able to use that scene of that movie in a really good reference. It's a really good reference.
Like there are snakes in grad school, and you find one person to get out of there with.
Yeah.
And you're like, cool. Because you can't be friends with everybody.
No, that's true.
You, even if you wanted to, the amount of time you have for a studio practice and a job and then going to art openings and having those pilgrimages, you can't stay in contact, which was hard for me because I had never had that many people around me. I had to keep up with, and I was like, hold on, I'm getting angry so often. This is not good.
I felt that way too about grad school. I felt more angry in grad school than I think in undergrad. Undergrad, I was still laid back and this is fucking a blast.
SFAI's undergrad is so, those kids are so, thirsty. It's great. I don't want to compare it to the grad program, but I would say that it's not the same, but that's because you're usually older and more jaded, if I'm being nice. But
right.
But also the grad school,
and let's be real, I think if we match up the years and the average age group when we were going to school, most of the people we went to school with either graduated within a year, the year of, or the year after the recession happened. So we're probably jaded a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, I moved to Boston right after 2007.
Yeah.
2008.
That was the beginning of it.
Yeah, I had no idea what politics were. I was like, I don't have to, there's no fight yet. We're going to be okay, maybe?
Yeah.
It's like, this last year has just been like, oh my fucking God.
Well, I mean, and think about it, the kids we went to school with, because we went around the same time, we, all of us, were the ones reading all the cover of the newspapers and the cover of the magazines and Time Magazine having stories like, class of 2009, will they be able to find jobs? I'm like, wait a minute, I was the class of 2009, what the fuck?
Oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, grad school is my safe word now. It's just it comes up at openings, and it's like, oh, okay, all right, calm down.
But it wasn't bad. I mean, you got friends out of it. I mean, you got some really good friends out of it.
I mean, if I had to do it again, it would be in a different city, I guess. Sure. There's nothing wrong with this city, but just for the sake of doing new things, new experiences.
Yeah.
It was a lot. It was good to see myself make as much work as I did, because you don't get that now. You get a couple started paintings and you get them done maybe in a couple months instead of a week. And I don't think that's the week long painting isn't realistic for me.
Sure.
I like to spend time and look at it, craft it.
Yeah. More thought is put into it.
Yeah. A lot of times overthinking, which is a bad thing, but that's a constant struggle.
Right. But you're not the type that where you feel like you've gotten to a point where you made something and halfway through you're like, I overthought that this is garbage and you throw it out.
Oh, I mean, usually if I overthink it, it's because I was laughing deliriously at myself and that's okay because it makes you sound crazy and people don't want to argue with crazy people. It's like, no, we'll just let him have this cake and eat it too. I think that's what a lot of the critiques became at the end of the year was stand up in your studio like stand-up comedy with like your work and like a penis joke ready to go because all of them had penises in them. Like it was like the safe place. It was like, oh, well, this isn't gonna like, I don't want to sell this or I don't want to address like a market value or trend. Right. I'm just gonna throw a penis in there. No one wants to like look at, talk or buy.
Sure. But you know what? It's interesting you say that because some of the world's most valuable artwork, like I mentioned before, is those marble Renaissance sculptures that have obvious penises in them.
Small ones too. In Florence, there are a lot of small marble penises.
Yeah.
At the Vatican, they have been chiseled off.
Right.
Which is very excruciating to watch. Whole hallway of it. Just like you could tell someone with a chisel just went.
Dink. Right. Because they didn't want to like, they wanted to censor that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe.
The Pope was like, this is really great until we get to this area here. We should chip that off a little bit. Michelangelo, is that cool? Can we do that?
Yeah. I think after grad school, I got good with disguising the phallus, if we're being academic, where it's like, it's not like a anatomically correct like penis and balls.
Yeah.
It's more like in sweatpants. Like I feel like they're tented.
Right.
They're like softly curved.
They're tented.
There's no veins or hair.
Yeah.
I just love that that's an available metaphor. Because it's a question. Is it sexy or not?
Right.
Like is in sweatpants, you're like, well, this is low.
Let's be real. Human genitalia, male or female, it's not exactly the prettiest thing. If you really think about it.
I mean, mine's beautiful. I can only speak for me. This is what I've learned. But it's also like you don't sell. Like art fairs aren't stocked with like cock paintings.
Right.
That's one thing I've learned from going to a couple. Is like, well, these paintings are here to sell because you had to pay for crating.
Sure.
And like. Housing and there's like big dinners afterwards, so you need to bring something that like it's going to make you money quick.
Right.
And what I've seen has been sort of like torso sized work, abstraction of some kind or like photography.
Sure.
It's like easy to have a conversation to approach it quicker. Like I'm specifically thinking of like Untitled Art Fair that was this last fall, I think.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh yeah, like this is why I like gestural abstraction, or like, you know, these photos really resonate with me right now because it feels like they're viable,
sure,
in some regard. And like you have like genitalia in a painting, it's like that's a little bit tougher of a conversation to have at an art fair where people are just coming at you from all angles,
right.
And like they're overwhelmed because they're like, is this a maze? I don't know where I'm at. What is this? What am I doing afterwards? It's like, who is that? Did I know them? What happened?
Well, do you have anything coming up, dude, work-wise?
Like,
no shows?
I mean, every night I work.
You're just chilling. And just doing your work.
I have a routine where I come home, I get to the studio after work.
Yeah.
Friday nights, I like to be in here drawing.
Yeah.
That's like my most happiest night is like Friday night by myself. But then there's sometimes there's openings. There's an opening tonight. You have to go to an altar space. But I don't think I have anything. I don't have anything coming up. It's a relief, I would say. Because I would be a different person if I did.
Right. Well, and then now that you say that, I wonder how different your work would be if you were in that mindset where you had to like, you had to hurry up and get something done because someone wants you to put something in their show.
I'd like to think that I would stop working on paintings quicker. Like I like to start them. In a way it's like overcommitting, but then like being blasé about it and being like, well, I don't need to finish this. I'm my own.
Yeah.
I don't like to say boss because as soon as this feels like a job, it's just like, who am I? What?
I'm my own boss.
Yeah.
I work from home.
Yeah, I love this job. This is a great job. But yeah, I don't have anything coming up. I would probably complain more if I did, which is already something I'm really good at. Like I just can't stop about that stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for coming on, dude.
Yeah,
and I love talking to you. No, this is great. Got to get inside the mind of a painter.
A colorblind painter.
Right. Which I had no idea. Which is not that was a new thing I learned about you today.
I mean, certain amount of men are because of a woman's gene, and there is a women can see more color.
Yeah.
Even extra color than men. That's a Radiolab podcast.
Interesting.
Yeah. Tetrachromat, I think is what they're called. Kudos to ladies everywhere.
Well, on that note, thanks, man.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks again to David for coming onto the podcast. If you want to learn more about David and his work, visit his website at davidlasley.org or follow him on Instagram at @Mr_Lasley_. Finally, be sure to visit the podcast website at artscenepc.com to check out pictures of David's work that we discussed on the episode. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter or Instagram at @artscenepc. Till next time, everyone.